Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good morning, off the shelf listeners. This is a record day. I have never been late. Hello, I'm here.
This is Yolanta.
Hi, Yolanta. Hi, so happy to have you here. I actually had computer challenges waiting for my computer to come up this morning.
Oh my gosh!
You know,
and I'm at a state track meet. So I was like, oh no.
We're live on the air, just to let you know.
Hallelujah.
So the listeners can hear whatever we're saying, just to let you know.
Yes.
We are live on the air, and we're being taped right now.
Fantastic.
Thank you, and thank you for dialing in. I so appreciate it. I wanted to let our listeners know, I've never been late to my own show, and I think it's about 4 minutes after waiting for, and I just told myself, like I do sometimes when some guests are unable to make it or are late, that things happen. I don't know what's happened, but just stay relaxed. It'll work itself out. So to our listeners, thank you for hanging in there with us this morning here as we prepare for the show on Off the Shelf. And I thank you for always tuning in to our Off the Shelf listeners. And as my standard introduction, this is Off the Shelf, and it's Saturday, June the 5th, and we're so happy to have you here with us this morning. For those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, we have many loyal off-the-shelf listeners. My name is Denise Turney, and I'm coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And as always, I thank you for your support. I cannot thank you enough. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving and inspirational book that you absolutely need to add to your book collection. And you can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of the book from Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, etc. And if you don't see it on the shelf, simply ask the book clerk for it because it's carried by the largest distributors in the world. And now I want to say to our gracious listeners here at Off the Shelf on this blessed day that we're going to bring to you four writers, one who is on the line now, who are from the Premier Writers Group. And the writers are Martha Tucker, Janice Lauderdale, Stan Alotti, and Yolanta Pace. And these four writers are on an international tour to connect with readers and share information about their books. Yolanta's on now, so she's the only one on. She's going to, bless her, she's going to get the most mileage out of it. But we are so happy to have them here with us this morning. Premier Writers is online at HTTP with the /, Premier Writers, and it's spelled P-R-E-M-I-E. rewriters.ning.com. Again, that's premierwriters.ning.com. That's where you can go and find a group online. I think there are over 500 members on Premier Writers currently. And so I say welcome to Off the Shelf to our Premier Writers. We have one with us this morning, Yolanta. I'm not sure if the others that called in and with my dialing in late, waiting for the computer to come up, that they dropped off. I'm not sure. But I've been looking forward to the interview, and we are going to move forward just like we always do here on Off the Shelf, which is the blessing, is it, so our listeners can see that things do happen in life that you might not expect. Rather than get spazzed out over it, just stay relaxed. It will work itself out, and just be gracious through it all. And when other people may not do what you think they do, you don't know what's going on with them either. So rather than be angry or in your mind create stories, just stay gracious and stay in love, in the energy of love. So I want to make sure that our off-the-shelf listeners get to know you, Yolanta, since you are the only caller on the line right now. And do you know, by any chance, what the other three authors are? Martha?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Because I am in Kentucky, they're in California, and so we've just met online initially, and so I don't have face-to-face contact with them today.
Okay, we're going to move forward. I know you were at a college at a track and field meet, and so I really appreciate you dialing in, Yolanta. But I just wanted to give each of you, and I'm going to give you more time right now until they join. The interview is going to focus specifically on you and your books and your work. So you either staying on the line or dialing in, is going to end up blessing you. So to begin, I wanted you to take some time, introduce yourself to our off-the-shelf listeners, tell them some about your background and your writing background, things like where you're from and how long you've been writing.
No problem. I'm Yolanta Pace. I am a missionary, evangelist, and ambassador to Haiti. If you would have told me when I was a little girl in elementary school that when I grew up I was going to do missionary work, if you would have told me that when I was in high school, if you would have told me that even in college, I would have probably looked you dead in the eye and said, "You are a lie," and stormed out the room.
Wow.
Because I always believe that the calling on somebody's life to be a missionary, to be an evangelist, and these are people, you know, your regular church people get those calls compared to maybe being called to be a preacher. I thought you had to be next to perfect to get a call like that.
Okay.
And I'm aware of all of my imperfections. And I was on the mission field for about 2 years before I'd even call myself a missionary. And that was because as a little African-American girl, I'd never seen a black missionary before.
Okay.
I've seen white missionaries, but I'd never seen one that looked like me.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching at a school, and there was a little black girl and a little white girl walking down the hallway. I was going to be teaching African dance to the school, and this is located in Kentucky. I had been introduced to the school earlier as a choreographer, dancer, and missionary, and all my little accolades were rolled off the tongue. But when this little black girl and white girl saw me walking, as they were walking down the hall, the white girl goes, "Look, there's the dancer." And the little black girl said, "No, it ain't. That's the black missionary."
Oh.
And that stopped me in my tracks.
Wow.
I went to the bathroom and looked in the mirror, and that was the first time I ever saw a black missionary. It was
my own
reflection in the mirror.
Wow, and there's something.
And I had to rethink that M word, being a missionary, and the kind of impact it was going to have on other people of color who've never seen a missionary that looked just like them.
Wow. That's an amazing story. So how did you take the missionary experience, and then I have the little girl say that obviously was confirmation, but how did you take your experience? I know you continue to work as a missionary, and also were you born and raised in Haiti?
No, I wasn't. I was born in Tacoma, Washington, but I was raised most of my life as a little girl in Amarillo, Texas, and then I did my high school years in Illinois. And my college years I spent in Columbia, Missouri, and then at the University of Texas in Austin, and then my graduate work was done at Penn State in Pennsylvania. So that's where I started collecting writing skills. But you always have to watch teachers and what they tell a student. My second year in college, in elementary school and high school, everyone told me I could write. When I got to college, they told me I could not write. I was the first time I ever got a paper back, and it was red from the beginning to the very end. I was so good that not have my name scribbled over as being wrong, because it was covered in red. And I told myself, I will never write another thing again except for schoolwork. So for years, at least 10 years, I stopped writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only reason I started back writing is I got caught up in a horrendous life of spousal abuse. And one of the strategies they tell you in order to not go crazy is to keep a journal. Because some of the tactics that an abuser will use will be things like he'll say he said something, he didn't really say it, or he'll say you said something. So to keep your sanity, they say keep a journal so you know what you really said. They also say keep that journal hidden because it can get you in trouble if he or she finds it. And so I started journaling in 1988 to keep my sanity. And then from then on, I just kept a journal all the time because I wanted to know what I really thought, because other people didn't find it valuable, seemingly to me. And then I got an opportunity to start publishing some things. People began to pay attention to what I had said. Now, another thing y'all want to put in the mix here, for all of you stutterers out there, I grew up a stutterer, a horrible stutterer, just like Moses in the Bible, and that's why I love Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told, because I'm 55, so back then they didn't have any really good ways of helping people who stuttered. I was told, well, shut up and come back when you have something to say.
Oh, my goodness.
Those are the kind of things that I was told as a little girl. So for years, I would barely even speak. My first years in elementary school, I kept my mouth shut because I didn't want people to know I was stuttering. But when I wrote things down, I loved my Smith Corona because then my words, my mouth, and my thoughts caught up with each other. I could type as fast as I could think. And nobody can see stuttering when you write it out. So I start writing things down, and people listen to me when it was in writing. Then I began to write recently for our newspaper.
Congratulations.
And to have people stop you in Walmart, in the Five and Dime, the 7-Eleven, Dollar General, and say, oh, I love what you said in the paper. Oh, I agree with you. Or even to say, I disagree. I can't believe you said that. That changed my whole sense of who I was. Now I have something to say, and people will listen if I write it down. Now, if you want to hear me stutter, get me so angry I can't hardly think straight, then I'll go back to my old-fashioned stuttering ways.
Now, you know what I'm listening to you, and there was another author that we interviewed here on Off the Shelf, Loretta Childress, and she said, if I'm correct, I think she was the author who said this. There was an author on the show, and for some reason I'm thinking it was her, that a school teacher, I forget what grade she was in. I don't think she was in college, but marked up her paper and really, she felt like, oh my gosh, she had really, like you, she had been getting positive comments on her writing for years. And then all of a sudden, to get this paper back that kind of spoke to her, or the way she perceived it, because sometimes it's not just the way the person sent the message. How do we receive the message?
Sometimes we
receive the message completely differently from the way it was intended. So she took it the way to say that these marks on the paper are just saying to you, you can't write. So she had stopped writing. But that might not be what the teacher's intentions were, but that's the way she received the message. And it took me years to learn. It's not just what you say to people, because you know what you intended and what you meant and what motivated you to say it, but if the receiver receives it totally different than what you said. What it matters is how what did the person hear? Not what do you think that you said. What did they hear? And that's why people have to continue to talk to each other. And when you see people make these funny faces, when you say things, you say, you know, like, did I catch you off guard? Or and so you can talk through it and let them know, no, I didn't mean it that way. And let them know clearly, then it can get rid of any confusion. Yolanta, I wanted to talk next about, tell us about some of the writings that you do. I know you said you write for your newspaper. If you could tell us, how did you get that job for off-the-shelf listeners who have maybe for years, Yolanta, been wanting to write for a local newspaper, but they haven't yet found a way to get their foot in the door? What advice could you give to them? And tell us about some of the other writings that you do.
All right, I'll tell you how the newspaper came about. For me, it was just a phone call. Is somebody said, told someone at our newspaper that there's this person in our community who writes, and she's African-American, and our newspaper did not have a lot of African-American minority writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I got that phone call. But I've also learned through that is if you can always write in the opinion section and start getting yourself published that way, because that's open to the whole public.
Mm-hmm.
So if you write into the opinion section of your newspaper, that can be a start of getting your stuff in print. Then you never know.
Yolanta, just to back up a little bit, because it's the universe definitely is working for you, but you didn't apply to write at the newspaper. Somebody who knew you told the newspaper. That is really, I've never heard of that before. So,
it's not only that. It wasn't somebody I hung with on a regular basis. it was just someone that I wasn't close to or anything. They needed a person, a minority person, a person of diverse background who wrote. And someone knew that I had been writing stuff and I had published a book, and they said, well, why don't you give her a call? But then they gave me the complete carte blanche. They said, we need a writer and you can write about anything you want.
Wow.
And I thought, I kept saying, anything, anything? So I've written everything from my own top 10 list and community of women to what's the matter with our schools today, to parents, you need to step up to the plate, to people that I admire in my life. So I had carte blanche.
Mm.
But it's about getting your just writing and people knowing that you write and somebody will recommend you for something.
Oh, I'm so glad.
It's not always. See, when I grew up in my generation, it was always about who do you know, who do you know. You got to know somebody to make it. But in this generation, my daughter, who's 25, she says, Mama, it's not about who you know. It's about who knows you. And that's really how I got this particular writing opportunity, somebody who knew me.
Now you,
it's not always who you know.
This is something that and we get these thoughts that we hear the phrases over and over, and then we just think it's a fact or truth in it, and it's not. It's just something we've heard so much that we readily accept it. But which is the important reason why we should examine things and really question things. Something that you said and this is the first time I've heard this, but the newspaper contacted you because somebody there knew of you, which is what I would say to our off-the-shelf listeners and the writers here who are trying to break in to print and be published. Continue to use your gift. Continue to use your talent and do what you love, because in time it will yield a reward. I think a lot of times things don't happen as fast as we want them to, and we either throw in a towel, or they don't happen on as large a platform as we want, and we throw in a towel. But man, you might have just been one step away from a phone call. So just keep at it. If it's something that you love, continue to do it. So other than newspaper writing, do you write poetry? What are some of the other writings that you do?
I have two books, award-winning books, that have been published. One is called Wing Plucked Butterfly, and that's one woman's fight against domestic violence and abuse against, well, really, it's a war on hate crimes against women and children.
Okay.
Then I have the book that's followed called Shout, Mammy, Shout, and that's when I really got my voice back and my ability not to talk about what I've been through, but an opportunity to talk about everything in the world and my opinion on it. So I have everything from dealing with having a pen pal on death row. I actually talk about the devastation for me on September 11th, what that felt like. In that book, I talk about my grandfather and how he taught me to have a sense of pride, because for the first time in my life, I got to pick cotton. So I have a whole thing about what that experience is like for me as a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm working on my memoirs as a missionary to Haiti. I just put out a 10th book called Nobody Knows the Haiti I've Seen. When I write, I write poetic form. Even my essays are somewhat a smorgasbord of poetic type of views and use of wording. And the one that just came out that I printed myself, because I'm waiting on a big one to come, but children are dying right and left in that wonderful land we call Haiti. And I just couldn't take it anymore. And God said to me, I'm one of these people who has an ear tuned to the great creator. I know a lot of people have many names for him, but my tradition says his name is God.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, get up. Pick about 5 poems, a few essays, and then some traditional Haitian recipes. Put them in a book. Go down to your local printer and get that printed. I said, God, I don't have any money. He says, go to the printer. Do what I said.
Mm-hmm.
I had just enough money to get 150 books printed. And the third book I gave away, the person says, hey, let me sponsor you to get another 150 printed.
Oh, my goodness.
It's about being obedient.
Yes.
I call him God or whatever the calling,
oh,
creator
goodness.
Or maker on your life.
Oh, my
be
goodness.
Be obedient to your calling
yes.
in life. I am called to be all over the world, internationally, a speaker on behalf of underserved populations of women and children, to be their voice, because there was nobody to be the voice for me when I stuttered.
Mm.
When people said, go away and come back when you have something else to say, there was nobody to say, wait a minute, what she's trying to say is this, 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 or she wants a drink of water, or she's
mm-hmm.
trying to tell you that there's a fire in the backyard.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh,
my calling on my life is to step up to the plate and say, wait a minute, this is something these people are needing. For
mm.
example, we don't know anything about Haiti. CNN is not showing all of Haiti. It's much worse than what CNN is showing, but also it's 10 years on the mission field. One day I got up, I'm in the mountains, and I froze on my tracks. I kept staring at this thing and staring at this thing. I couldn't figure out what it was. And was like, oh, my gosh, where's my camera? Where is my camera? I had left my camera back in the room where I was staying. What I was staring at, what took my attention and froze me in my tracks was a butterfly. They have butterflies in Haiti. You see, nobody knows the Haiti I've seen.
Mm.
They have fog thicker than carnival cotton candy. They have spiders bigger than my own hand. They have little children, boys lined up in the village street, standing, waiting to get their head dry shaved with a straight edge razor. In Haiti, I've seen a little boy, 5 years old, giving his baby brother a bath in a bucket.
Mm. Mm.
People do not know all of Haiti. Haiti, on the mountains, the stars are so big that you look like you could just reach up there and grab one and put it in your pocket. And when I tell people that, I start singing, catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away. Save it for an earthquake day.
Wow.
There is a Haiti that no one is talking about and that I've seen and must
yeah.
be shared.
You have a beautiful voice. For that thing.
Oh, thank you.
I have my friend, a writer, author of the book, Akenna No One, Nicole Titus. She is actually from Haiti, and she wrote a book. Her book talks about the struggles that the family goes through, particularly the mother, to make sure that her youngest daughter receives an education. And Edwidge Danicat also is a Haitian author, very, very talented writer. And she writes
uh-huh.
more in the literary field, but they talk about the, and I think a lot of the political infrastructure in the country has been not at what it should be for years. So it's not
exactly.
this wasn't something that happened when the earthquake occurred. Especially when I read my friend Nicole's book, and education is not a mandatory thing there. It's not mandatory.
No.
She wants to at least get it, and she's working over there doing what she can, although she lives in New York
mm-hmm.
City, but to at least make it mandatory that children receive at least a fifth grade education
oh my
up to
God.
The fifth grade. And she said that it's really the wealthy or the people who are in the high places in the government, their children receive an education, and other children
right.
don't. And years ago, even in America, it was more that way, but I'm going back hundreds of over 150 years here in America when it was like that. Really only
no, baby.
Wealthy people's kids.
I'm going to challenge that. It wasn't 150 years ago. My mother, who is 78, she grew up to where her daddy, my grandfather, insisted that African American children get more than a third grade education. Because the saying then where they were, down in the boonies in Texas, is a black person don't need no education. They don't need to know past the third grade. My grandfather fought that and made sure that the very first high school, E.H. Henry High School for Children of Color, was done. It's not 150 years ago, sweetie.
Okay.
It's in my lifetime.
Wow.
I've even heard it said the best way to ruin a black person is to teach them to read.
Wow. Oh, my
God. So we don't have to go very far back in America. Okay. That's why my heart is with Haiti, because I still can smell and feel and taste the texture of that kind of lifestyle for people of color here in America.
Right. Well, thank you for clarifying that, because the right thing should come forth. So I appreciate you doing that. But that actually, for our listeners, that went on here in this country. Is people don't like to think about that, but that actually went on in America at one time, and also in Haiti. So it's not just the earthquake that has devastated the country over there, but also their political infrastructure. And this is some kind of a morning this morning. I'm going to do my job promoting this show, because I came in late, and so people are probably going to hear air silence at the start of the show. And Yolanta had dropped off, but she is back.
Hello.
Yolanta, I'm here, and I'm glad you are faithful. You are so faithful. I want to let our listeners hear it off the shelf. Know that we are speaking with Yolanta. Yolanta Pace, and she has written three books. She just came out with a new one, The Wing Plucked Butterfly, which is deals with domestic violence, and she also has written Shout Many Shouts, which is sort of like a book of essays and her views on various topics, and Nobody Knows the Haiti I Sing, which she recently, her new book is Nobody Knows the Haiti That I Sing. She is a missionary. She also is a member of the Premier Writers Group. And she is, I have to let our listeners know, it's amazing how life unfolds. She is so faithful. For the first time ever, I was waiting for my computer to come up, and so I was in late on the show. But she was here, very faithful here, and supposed to be a group of authors here. And Yolanta was the one that actually showed up. So she's going to really get the most mileage out of this show today, but that speaks volumes about her. I wanted to talk just a little bit about The Wing Plucked Butterfly and each of your other books a little bit more in detail.
Okay.
Is The Wing Plucked Butterfly somewhat like a memoir or autobiography where you share your personal experiences, or is it you take stories from other women and other men who might have gone through domestic abuse, and then you incorporate their stories into the book as a whole? Or is it a book where you give out to people resources that they can go to get help if they're living in a domestic violence situation? What type? Can you tell us a little bit more about the book itself?
Yes, Wing Plucked Butterfly is my own personal experiences on how I got out of that horrific life of hate crimes. Then I wrote some little pamphlets that I call palmettes, so that women can recognize the fact that they're in a domestic situation that's not healthy. Because I didn't know for the first 3 years that there was anything wrong. I thought every woman lived this way. And I grew up where the whole thing about spare the rod, spoil the child was taken to mean that if your child acts up, you smack them. And so the very first time I was abused was I thought I deserved it. I disagreed with something that had been said, and we were driving, and he told me, get out the car. I obediently got out. He was my husband. He loves me because they talk about I'm only doing this because I love you. I grew up hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured he loves me. He's disciplining me. For disagreeing with what he had to say. So he put me out the car. Well, I got out and I walked home. I thought every woman was going through those kinds of things.
Wow.
I thought, you know, when he says, where do you want to go out to eat? And you say, well, I want Chinese. He says, well, I don't like Chinese. Let's go Italian. Then I just thought the woman, if you love him and you're being submissive.
Yeah.
From then on, I don't like Chinese anymore. I like Italian.
Wow.
My favorite candy bar change. If I like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, but he likes Snickers. So what kind of candy do I bring in the house from now on? Snickers candy bar. So I squelched who I was. My favorite color, I don't even remember what it was back then. my favorite color became his favorite color because I was in love. And that's what I thought submissive meant, because church never breaks down what submissive means. Church never breaks down of what it means to be unequally yoked. It meant I had to change to be just like him to keep him happy. And when everything hit the fan and I decided, God decided for me, because I didn't have enough sense to decide, that it was time for me to leave, first thing out of some of my close relatives' mouth was, well, what did you do?
Oh, my goodness.
Didn't you cook right for him? Why didn't you change the way you cook? Why didn't you change whatever it is he needed you to do? And I was like floored that I had failed as a woman, as a human being, as a mother. But what got me out of it was the fact that the final abuse happened in front of my daughter, who was 2.5 years old. He decided he wanted to take my life. And he would have taken it. I would have submitted to the abuse, submitted to my final breath, if she hadn't been there watching it. Something in me said, I don't want her to know that a man can treat you like this.
Oh, thank
you. And since I thought that thought, somebody screamed bloody murder. He had me pinned to the bed. He was choking me. And his itinerary for me that day was to dismember me. There was a chainsaw in the corner, and he'd moved to the refrigerator, and he'd cut a hole underneath where the refrigerator was. And the police said that he was allegedly going to dismember me and stuff me in a hole underneath our house. But that scream shocked me. It shocked my husband. And he got up because nobody had ever screamed in our house before. That scream came from my little 2.5-year-old daughter.
Oh, thank God. And oh,
so
my goodness.
He saved my life.
How this is my question for our listeners here who might be going through that, and I hope this doesn't happen, somebody who might be headed down that path. You often hear this question because somebody who is abusive, the abuse just gets worse as it goes on. It just gets worse. That's the reason that I've never heard anybody who was abused say it got better. It gets worse. So I don't care if it's somebody pushing you first or making you get out of the car and walk or twisting your arm. It's only going to get worse because the person sees every problem from their past and their current life. They make you the cause of all their problems. So can you imagine what your life's going to be like if somebody sees you as the cause of every pain they feel or have felt? You're like a bullseye. They just, every hurt, everything, losing a job, whatever, did not getting a promotion, your fault. It's too hot outside, and they're uncomfortable or something. Your fault. It's somewhere in them. You're the object of that, and they just keep taking it out on you. That's not a good situation. But for people who are in relationships, and they might be wondering, you know what, I don't know about him and her, because some women are also abusive to men as well. What are some of the signs before somebody hits someone, before you might even get married, are there signs that you can look for to say, you know what, I better back out of this?
Yes. Are you allowed to have an opinion?
Okay.
Is your opinion valid? And even if I don't mind, it's okay if you disagree. Do they put you down because of what you say? It's one thing to say, you know, let's agree to disagree. But to say, well, that's a stupid way to think. Oh, nobody thinks like that. Those are the kinds of things that are stepping to the abusive thing. Or when you want to go someplace and you've always worn that dress. This is a dress he used to really, really like when he first met you. But you hear, you're not going to wear that, are you?
Okay.
And you go, but this is your favorite dress. No, don't wear that. You look like a hussy. Well, you know, I didn't look like a hussy. I first was introduced to you in this. You love this dress.
Right.
And things like paranoia of other people looking at you.
Okay.
I saw him look at you. No, he didn't. Who? What? Well, I'm just at Walmart. Or you spoke too long to the preacher. You shook his hand too long.
Oh, my goodness.
Start to monitor your relationships with people of the opposite sex. Then it creeps into your relationships with your family and your friends.
Wow.
Who's that on the phone? Well, you're talking too long. Time to get off the phone.
Oh, my goodness.
Pick up. I'm hungry. This, that, and the other. Or, you know, your friends have an opportunity to talk to you all day long. When I come home, I'm the king of the castle. You need to be devoting all your time to me.
Wow.
So you need to tell your friends to call before I get home at 6 o'clock.
Oh, my goodness.
Things like that. Now, you say, oh, my goodness, I thought I was being the obedient wife. I was being the submissive wife. He loves me, so therefore I have to be obedient to what he wants. This makes him happy. This is how you keep your man. You do things like that. I didn't know no better. I thought every other woman was going through the exact same thing.
So that's one of the. This is one of the blessings from your book, that and then when women, when we are open and candid and transparent with each other, that we see this isn't the way it is all the time. This is not. This is unusual. This, and for women who've grown up in a relationship home where they saw their mother be abused and their grandmother and their friends' mothers, then yes, you could think this is normal. Very so. As we get out in the world and we have different experiences, I think then we can see it's unusual. I'm so grateful that your daughter was not that she had to witness that, but that she did scream and that it was able to. To stop him. I'm grateful for that. But the message I really wanted to get across to the listeners is that it does not get better. It may start off, like you said, with constant criticism. You can see this person. It's almost like they're attacking you first emotionally and psychologically, and then they start to attack you in other ways. It's only going to get worse. I've heard so many stories of people who stayed in relationships because they thought if they just cleaned the house more, or if they just had sex with the person more, or if they just dressed differently or lost weight, that it would get better. There's something in the person. They're sick, so it's not going to get better.
Let me also introduce something else to you. What if you or I grew up in a very critical environment? If my mom and dad were very critical of me, or my grandmother. So if that's your norm, I mean, if I heard things where I set up and come back when you have something to say, or you're so lazy, oh, that's so stupid. If you're saying things like this to your little girl or your son, when they hear it in high school when they're getting ready to date a boy, they're used to hearing it. They think it's the norm. So we need to step back and look at how, especially what I'm calling woman-on-woman crime, how we misuse and abuse each other. Women say to one another, "Ugh, well, you sure you want to wear that? Oh, you look fat in that." So, you know, we could keep it in the bud by the way we treat women, the way we treat one another. For example, we as women never get past being called a girl, and I cannot stand that.
My question is,
how many periods do I have to have? How many tampons do I have to use? How many turkeys do I have to face it? How many breasts do I have to have before I am a woman? Now, a man, the minute he sees a hair on his chest or his chin, he a man. Mm. A boy becomes a man the minute that hair sprays out.
Mm.
But what do I have to do for you to consider me a woman? And as long as men call us girls, they don't see us as eye-to-eye peers.
Mm.
As long as, oh, we girls today. And I got in a fight almost at a restaurant with three other women that were in their 50s like me, and this little whippersnapper of a high school pierced from all in his ears and his nose and his eyebrow. "Hello, girls. What can I get for you girls today?" The other three women, they ordered. I didn't say anything. I said, "I'm so sorry, but I'm a woman. I'm not a girl." And he's just so taken aback. I said, "I'm old enough to be your grandmother." I said, "So I prefer to be called a woman." I said, "What do I have to do to prove I'm a woman?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry." When he left, the other women said, "Oh, why would you say that? I'm so happy to be a girl. It keeps me young."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I don't want to be young. This is a frame of mind in my head. I don't want to be a girl. I don't need an 18-year-old to call me at 55 a girl, and that makes me feel good. If that's what I need in order to feel good, I have a false sense of who I am as a woman."
Mm.
And see, Jesus spoke of women when he was here. he didn't speak, he didn't call them girls. He called them women.
Mm-hmm. I've often wondered why, and again, sometimes I thought, well, it does make a person, I guess a girl, you would think young, but then I don't hear men, when men call other men boy, it's derogatory.
Yes,
it's derogatory. Yeah, no, it doesn't matter what country they're from, color, anything. It's derogatory. It's seen as offensive. And then when men call women girls, it's so, I don't know, accepted. But I can say this. Women that I've seen men truly admire could be a Maya Angelou. I'm just giving examples. A Mother Teresa, the First Lady, Coretta Scott King. They don't call them girls.
No, they don't.
That's a little something to do with respect.
We can stop it. We can stop it. You don't answer. Someone says, how are you girls today? You just keep walking, even in the mall. Or you tell them, I'm so sorry. I must be confused. But there are no girls. Or when I'm with my daughter, when she was younger than 15, are you talking to my daughter? She's a girl. I'm the woman in this relationship. I try to be nice about it. Try to be gracious about it as much as I can. But we need a new awareness. We need to be educated to the fact that as long as you're a girl, you're considered a little plaything, something to play with, your trophy. As a woman, I can stand toe-to-toe with you and sail a ship, fly to the moon, build a car. That's where we need to get if we want to change the whole temperature on this abusive and hate crimes against our women.
I like, Yolanta, one thing that your approach, and you know, I know you share your personal story in Wing-Plucked Butterfly, which, again, for our listeners, deals with domestic abuse, but you're taking it back to the root, not just once you get into an abusive relationship, but in listening to you talk, how do we even raise our children, and how do we prepare ourselves to accept abuse that we don't even, we may not have seen that we're doing that, or how do we prepare and position our youth and other women to not accept abuse, to see right away, you know, if somebody just called me out of my name, and that is not right. And immediately the person just, it ends it. They know, but if you accept or been trained and prepared to accept being called out of your name, somebody calls you your name, you don't know that anything wrong happened.
Okay, well, listen to this, my dear precious sweet sister. I'm in church, and walks this little boy. He's about, 2 years old, and he's decked. He's got his little bow tie on, matching suit. His shoes are all shiny, and he's looking so good. And then somebody else in church goes, look at that little man. That's a lady killer right there.
Oh.
We've already programmed him with verbiage like that.
Yeah.
He's a little lady killer. You better watch out for him. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Wow.
What are we doing?
Right. I don't think we're aware. I don't think we are aware. We used to hearing things we don't understand, maybe the full impact of what it is we're saying. So thankful to people like yourself who are helping us to become more enlightened about how we start very early to possibly prepare people to be an abuser or to accept abuse and go years without even realizing that something is wrong, because we've prepared and positioned them for. I want to talk, because we're coming down, we have like 12 minutes left in the show, Yolanta, and I wanted to ask you in regards to promoting, marketing, and getting the word out about your books, Nobody Knows the Haiti I Sing, Wing-Plucked Butterfly, and Shout Many Shouts. Also, for our listeners here off the shelf, Yolanta Pace is who we are speaking with, the featured author here on today's Off the Shelf show. She also is a newspaper writer, and she got that job by someone knowing that she was a writer and an employee at the newspaper calling her, so that's how she landed that role. But I wanted to ask you, when it comes to promoting and marketing your books and the other articles and material that you write, what would you say is more important, networking, particularly with the social medias that we have, networking to promote your books in the social networks, or getting out and actually meeting readers face to face? Which
all
would you say is more important?
All of the above. All of the above. We need to learn how to be versatile. We need to learn how to be flexible. You can't sit and wait on that phone call. You need to be on the internet. You need to be searching out the different avenues that your writing might appeal to and or help. You need to be out amongst people. You need to carry your books with you. If nobody knows the Haiti I've seen, because I happened to have one with me yesterday at a photography studio, and the lady says, well, can you give me your card? Well, I was out of cards, but I had my book. So I gave her a book. You know, since it's a chap book, it's an easy read. She stood right there and read the whole thing.
Okay.
To have your stuff with you and on you, not just your card, but the real deal of whatever it is. You got to be okay about having to share things and maybe giving one or two away for free.
Okay. Okay.
And you go ahead.
No. So you can, so as word of mouth is the number one way to market and promote. You give some out for free, people enjoy it, they'll tell somebody else about it. And sometimes they'll come back and even buy a few copies to support you as well.
They'll say, I need some more. My auntie and my mother saw the book, and I wouldn't let them have mine, so I need to get one for a birthday gift or Christmas gift. You have to be bodacious about what you have to offer. And if what you have to offer you feel that the world needs, you can make a change, and it's a calling on your life where you eat, sleep, drink it, it makes you have to get it out there. I don't want to see or hear about another baby dying in Haiti. So I got up off the couch and did the CAPS book as I wait on my big book to come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what do you want, how bad do you want it, what are you willing to do to get it and still be able to sleep well at night.
Now, Yolanda, did you always know, like, for example, I don't know how many authors, I myself don't do this. I do have in my car my books, but I don't know how many authors keep a copy of their books with them at all times. I've heard other people say absolutely do that. Did you know this when you first published your first book, or is this something you learned from experience along the way?
I was just fussing with my daughters about getting into the modeling industry and how we keep everything so secret. We won't share with other people. Almost everything I've done, I've had to do it through the hard knocks. That's why I don't mind telling you, sweetie pie, where your book? You're an author? Oh, you need to get to, you need to have one on you at all time. I want to see it. Everybody says, well, I'm writing a book. Show me yours. Show me the money. Have it with you, not just a card. Everybody has a card. What will make you different and stand out? You've got the book. The big book that I'm writing, I was keeping a lot of my sketches on me. So there are people who have seen the sketches that go in that book. Don't be afraid to, while you're waiting to do something, pull out, start writing in front of people. Other people are just sitting there twiddling their thumbs or fussing and whining, complaining. Start writing something. Somebody's going to ask, what are you doing?
Right.
My journaling. My journal, I make the covers to my journals, and those are part of the things that I sell to help raise funds for Haiti. People see my journals and like, what are you writing in? Oh, that's pretty. I want one of those. How can I get one of those?
Now, Yolanda,
stuff marketable.
For our listeners here at Off the Shelf who'd like to reach out to you directly, do you have a website? And if so, could you give us the URL, or how could they find you?
You can reach me through Premier Writers. You can get plug that in. I'm on that. I'm on you can reach me through my blog, Yolanta Haiti, YOLANTHAITI. If you plug that in, do that into Google, you can Google my name. But I'm going to be so bold as to give my phone number out. If anybody, I would love to talk to them about their writing capabilities, what they want, their dreams, or if they would like more information about Haiti. If they like any of the things and want to help sponsor, my phone number is 859-936-7313. My email address is yolantapace@gmail.com. That's yolantapace@gmail.com.
Okay, so
I
that's
believe in being transparent and accessible.
Okay, so you can reach her either through Premier Writers or you can actually shoot her an email if you have questions. And Yolanta is responsive, so if you go to Premier Writers, and it's free to join, you can shoot her an email through Premier Writers as well. Yolanta, we're coming down to like the last 6 minutes of the show. I wanted to ask you, what impact do you see e-books, which are really, really on the rise, having on the print book industry 2 to 5 years from now?
3 to 5 years, I think it's going to be wonderful. They've got a lot of bugs they need to iron out right now. But, you know, this is the time when people get in on the ground floor and are able to make a mega buck instead of waiting and getting on the bandwagon. People that are helping to or purchasing these things and then going like, oh, this isn't working, this is why, and then having an input and having a say-so. I think e-books are the books of the future. I still love a real book with a binder and with pages. I like to cuddle up to that at night rather than my electronics. And I believe in the library. I believe in having a library card. But there is this other thing. It's easier sometimes to have the electronic stuff with you. But on the airplane, they don't tell me to close my book. We're going in for a landing. I would have to, you know, there are places that you feel like you turn off your cell phone to come in for a landing.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, I was just saying times are changing. You have to be ready to go with the times.
Okay.
Right now I have a book that I'm putting out on how to write and how to get through writer's block. I want it in hardback as well as the ebook format.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's the approach a lot of writers and publishers are taking. I know on this the international book tour that the Premier Writers are on, can you tell us some of the upcoming tour dates, locations where you all will be, and some of your upcoming speaking engagements?
Where our goal right now is we're trying to partner with a major situation in India, and that's where we're going to be going next. So I'm really excited about that. And right now I'm looking for places to go and speak about Haiti personally. I'm trying to get into Mississippi, into some of the churches, and get some of my plays out. I will have things listed on, you can reach me through my Gmail and probably through Premier Writers. They'll always know where I am, where I'm going, and where I want to be.
Okay.
I'm trying to go to Haiti again in August and get sponsored for that.
Okay, now if somebody wanted you to come and speak at one of their events, because you are a phenomenal speaker, I got to tell you, you really are, they could reach you through Premier Writers if they wanted to have you speak at either a conference or a college seminar, a writer's conference, or they could reach you through Premier Writers and you would be available. And I know you guys are on this international tour, so I'm not sure how often you guys are either traveling or doing interviews. But I think you've been on this tour for, a couple of months? Can you tell our listeners in just like maybe 1 to 2 minutes some of the places you guys have been?
Okay. This is a virtual tour. So this is a tour that we're doing from my home. I've been to Paris. We've been to I've visited India quickly, and then we're going back again for a more extended stay. This is a virtual tour where we do research about where we want to go, hook up with people through the internet, and then from there end up meeting other writers, finding places that speak English, for example, in Germany, and hooking up with different poetry clubs, writing groups. So the world, the sky's the limit. Well, the sky is no longer the limit either now that we've got places way up past where we can see that we will eventually be able to go to and communicate with. And some of our communication even goes past the sky to get to us. Right now, any place I want to go, I can put a virtual tour up on. Going in person, I'm ready. I like still the flesh-to-flesh, eye-to-eye, pressing the palm. I'm more of a trench woman.
Okay.
I wipe noses. I hug the unhuggable. I wipe tears from the children and people that other people don't want to touch. So I like that hands-on, body-on experience.
Okay. We have been talking with a phenomenal woman, Yolanta Pace, who has had a life full, or I mean, I tremendous and various different types of experiences in her life, and you can hear the fearlessness and the courage and the love and the vitality in her voice. So when it's in you, it nobody can take that away from you. So we want to thank her, Yolanta Pace. She was just diligent, faithful, persevered, and she was on the line before I even dialed in. And we were supposed to have a series of writers with us. And Yolanta, who is away from her home, dialed in. She's at a university track meet, so that speaks volumes about her. So she got spotlighted today. She got spotlighted because she was the faithful one. So I learned a lesson from her today. She was the faithful one, and so she was the one who got spotlighted. And as I promote the show, she will get, you know, even more and more yardage out of this. So I want to thank her for being here with us. She is the author, of the books. I want to get the name of her books quickly as we're coming down to the last seconds of the show. Nobody Knows the Haiti I Sing. She's a missionary for Haiti. Wing Plucked Butterfly, which is a book about domestic violence. And Shout Many Shouts, which is a book of essays that covers a variety of different topics. You can find Yolanta Pace, at Premier Writers, and that's premierwriters.ning.com. And she is responsive, so she does respond when people send her emails. And she's also a newspaper writer. Go check her out. Go check Yolanta out, and I will be promoting this show and Yolanta later today, right after we hang up. Thank her for being here. Thank our listeners here at Off the Shelf for again being here with us. I thank you for every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, you tuning in to Off the Shelf. And remember, as we close, that you are so valued, so loved, and so incredibly and truly blessed. Yolanta, I'll shoot you an email.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye. God bless
you. All right.
All right.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye, darling. Thank you.